Attention campers, the new Camp Snoopy at Kings Island brings your family summer camp fun all season long. Head to Camp Snoopy with Charlie Brown and the whole Peanuts gang for fun and adventure. Race forwards and backwards on the new family boomerang coaster, Snoopy Soapbox Racers. Explore on your own with more space to roam at Beagle Scout Acres. And don't forget to grab a snack at Pigpen's Mess Hall. It's a new way to play with the Peanuts gang at Camp Snoopy. Now open, only at Kings Island, for the fun of it.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Johann Schmiegel, you've got the world's highest IQ.
Yes, 247.
Wow, did you know that thanks to Salesforce with Einstein AI, everyone's smarter? Now everyone's an Einstein, just like you.
But I'm the smartest.
Not anymore. With connected data and trusted AI, everyone can give customers experiences they've only dreamed of. Oh, look, here's a few Einsteins now.
Hey, hi.
Hola, amigo.
Everyone's an Einstein?
It's okay, Johann, let it happen. The number one AI CRM. Now everyone's an Einstein with Salesforce.
This is Coast to Coast. I'm Carol Masser.
And I'm Corey Johnson. We're here every day bringing you the latest news from the world of business and finance.
And the most interesting stories in global technology from Silicon Valley and beyond, powered by our more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries.
You can download Coast to Coast on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Bloomberg.com. You can also listen to our radio show weekdays at 2 o'clock Eastern only on Bloomberg Radio.
This is Bloomberg Markets with Carol Masser and Corey Johnson on Bloomberg Radio.
All right, everybody, time for the Bond Report on this Wednesday afternoon. I'm Carol Masser along with Corey Johnson. Let's bring in our Bloomberg News Global Economics and Policy Editor, Kathleen Hayes. So, first Fed meeting of the year, last Fed meeting for Chair Janet Yellen. What are your thoughts here?
Well, first of all, let's just note that the long end of the Treasury curve has gained in the last hour. Mm-hmm. There was an initial, I think, a lot of movement up, and then everybody, well, there really wasn't much of a change. But for the long end, now up 18 30 seconds in price, the yield's at 2.941. The yield was at 2.968 just before the policy statement came out. Mm-hmm. Minor tweaks, small adjustments. People were looking for, oh, we're going to get a hawkish statement. Maybe Janet Yellen's going to want to look at the economy and tax cuts and let everybody know that, hey, you know, I'm leaving the Fed, kind of changing my view. As one of my colleagues on the Fed team wrote, Matt Bosler, he was quoting an analyst, she goes out more with not a whimper, but quietly, not with some big bang. There were, again, some minor adjustments, according to Stephen Stanley over at Amherst Pierpont. The most important tweak is the FOMC appearing to upgrade its inflation forecast in December. The 12-month inflation rate was expected to remain somewhat below 2% in the near term, but today they indicated it's expected to move up this year. I think the most clear thing people are coming away saying is this cements the March rate hike. Mm-hmm. As one comment said, but we're going to continue to watch the data. If you had to say, did it lean one way or the other? Yeah, maybe slightly more hawkish, but it kind of confirmed what people are expecting. As far as any big change, you don't see it. Another story on the Bloomberg, though, noting that there are end-of-month flows mm-hmm. going into the longer end of the curve, and that's probably one of the reasons we're seeing people buying the long end of the curve flattening a bit. So maybe that's counterintuitive, but I think a combination.
So really just a response to the bids that are coming in at this time.
Yeah, and the fact that there was no big surprise here.
All right, so there we have it in terms of the FOMC meeting. Let's talk about if any surprises in the batch of economic data that we got today. We have with us, of course, our Bloomberg Intelligence senior U.S. economist, Bloomberg Economics, I should say, senior U.S. economist, Yelena Shalitova. Yelena, we did have a batch of data today.
Yes, and one of the most important data releases was the employment cost index that we received mm-hmm. today, which again, confirmed gradual improvement in wage inflation. So nothing extraordinary, nothing to be alarmed about. Inflation is still under control, but gradual progress on the wage inflation front is very positive. So ECI on a year-on-year basis hit 2.6%, and that matched the recent peak. We see this slightly steady growing trajectory, which is positive. And
Which is what we would expect to see in this point of the economic cycle, right? We'd start to see wages increase.
Absolutely. And I think that actually filtered into the Fed's statement as they acknowledged modest improvement in inflation.
Yelena, what did you think of this statement? Did you get any takeaways from that?
Again, to me, this was probably the most notable improvement, the inflation upgrade. So they not only upgraded the inflation language itself, but they also acknowledged a pickup, even the modest one, in inflation expectations. What? So that is telling us that they are getting more confident in achieving the inflation target.
What I thought, too, was collectively acknowledging stronger growth and more confidence that inflation will rise to the 2% target, right? There's been a fair amount of debate about whether or not we need to rethink this inflation target, right? We've had Ben Bernanke raise, you know, saying that maybe there could be a conversation over the next 12 to 18 months.
I don't think this precludes at all the fact that they may still rethink that target. What they're saying is, yeah, we think it's going to go up there this year instead of just gradually rising, which I think that will encourage some people to say, oh, 4 rate hikes.
No.
Some people are sticking with they're the minority, but sticking with their 4 rate hike view. I think it's two different things. They're whatever they're trying to signal, and to a certain extent, they're just acknowledging what they see in the economy right now. And again, it just makes them all have a firmer footing that much more for the first rate hike for Jay Powell in March.
For us, I mean, inflation has to pick up much more aggressively for them to change. More hikes this year.
You guys still calling for 2?
We're still calling for 2, but we will like change our view if we see, some weaker inflation.
Are you data dependent too?
We are data dependent, and there's been a lot of movement in the dollar recently.
Yeah.
So the dollar has been weakening, and that is very
inflationary.
They're kind
of like paycheck to paycheck. They're data to data dependent.
So if we do see an inflation pickup, in other words, like a stronger one, we might reconsider.
Well, there's fewer chances now. They've only got 11 more chances to raise this year.
Well, not really 11 because they can't do it every month. But I one thing I'd like to throw in about the employment cost index is that it's not risen very much. It has raised a little. There are some other factors maybe going on. I think this is I think you're right to emphasize how much more it has to go. This is such a minor improvement, right? It's still way below the peaks we saw in other eras of growth. And it may never get that much because of the way the world has changed with technology and globalization. But it's still just, I think it's more of a hopeful sign than it is a confirmation that tight labor market has caused some new acceleration in wages.
Yeah, great points, Kathleen. And I think I like to look at the components by industry.
Right.
So if you look at the components of the employment cost index by industry, you'll see like a lot of improvement in transportation. So this is like coming with all these changes in online trading replacing brick and mortar stores. So you see a lot of demand for these professions. You see a pickup in ADP report for transportation sector. And you also see a big pickup in employment cost index for that industry. In fact, that index for transportation, I think more than doubled in the last 4 years. So here is your Phillips curve at work, but only in a given industry.
Where is it weakest in terms of wage increases?
I think, let me see. So that is like...
Well, while you do that, I'm just going to say that the company which makes Twinkies,
finance,
ding-dongs, and ho-hos is providing its employees a one-time payment of $1,250, $750 in cash,
$500 to be paid in ho-hos,
in the form of a 401k contribution. And apparently, they're going to get free food, too.
Better than nothing. Mm. Ho-hos, too. Better than nothing. Just
so
saying.
Notably, the weakest one is finance. So all big bonuses are gone, I guess, in the finance industry.
All right. Anybody?
One-time bonuses are not raises, so permanent changes in the economy are not happening here. We're just seeing a lot of bonuses.
There you go.
But Twinkies are awesome, says our producer, Paul Brennan. He would know.
Yeah. All right. Kathleen Hayes, Speaking Global Twinkies, Economics and Policy Editor. Yelena Shalitova, Senior U.S. Economist with Bloomberg Economics. This is Bloomberg. Doctor, my eyes, tell me what you see.
I hear their cries. Just say if it's too Doctor late. Kenneth Davis joins us right now, CEO of Mount Sinai Health Systems. For a look at what this sort of amazing group of companies might be up to when we see Amazon, Berkshire Hathaway, and J.P. Morgan trying to find a new way to deal with health care costs for their workers and perhaps more. Dr. Davis, this is a fun story to work on because it's a fun thing to think about, sort of. Maybe fun's not the right word. An interesting thing to think about. What is the biggest problem with our rising health care costs? We had a guest on yesterday who said people are just too damn old. I couldn't agree. I agree with that every day. More and more what's the problem?
Well, the problem is it's too big a percentage of GDP, and we all don't have a great idea what to do about it. There is a sense that the system now rewards performance over quality. It rewards actions and doing things to people rather than paying for outcomes. So what we have is a fee-for-service system in which the incentives are to do more because you get paid every time you do something, as opposed to a system in which you get paid a fixed amount and that amount doesn't change. In fact, what you might get is rewards if patients have better quality, better outcomes, stay out of the hospital, or avoid readmissions. That's called the system of population management or value. We're trying to move to that, but it's been going at a glacial pace.
Well, it's interesting. You said it's a system that rewards performance versus outcome. It's really like rewards frequency versus outcome.
It rewards frequency, right. It rewards activity. So there's a lot of activity. You know.
So how do we change it? Because I feel like the healthcare system has become such a financial juggernaut, and you know people are rewarded. You know, drug companies get rewarded if more doctors prescribe prescriptions. I'm not targeting anybody in particular, but I'm just saying you use more of this stuff. There's more demand for it, and there's more money that goes through the system. Not to mention that there's the healthcare, like many other industry groups, have become huge lobbyists down in Washington, so they have the ear of lawmakers.
Well, imagine if a large hospital system identified a few hundred thousand patients that were with a particular insurance company. And that insurance company said, guys, to the hospital, here's what we're going to do. We're paying you a fixed amount of money. We agree to it at the beginning of the year. And that's how much you're going to get no matter what you do to those patients.
An HMO.
Well, it's pretty much what was the HMO idea. We pay per capita. And then suddenly the system says, wow, the only way we have a margin here is to make sure we keep people well. Because if those people keep getting readmitted and they keep seeing the doctor all the time and we do test after test, we're just going to eat up that amount of money they gave us at the beginning of the year and we're going to run a big deficit. So suddenly we align payers, providers, and patients all to have the same thing in mind, and that is to be as cost-efficient as possible and have the best outcomes we possibly can have.
So, but is this pool large enough? I mean, a pool of these three companies large enough for them to create something? Like, it seems to me that there are other things that these guys are going to do other than just say, let's make everybody stay healthy. They're going to look at things. So let me ask you about cost. Is J.P. Morgan, I'm thinking of the Chase part of J.P. Morgan, are they in a position to actually know better what drugs actually cost and how much they're paying for them across a system of three companies such that they can strike better deals with common drug providers?
Well, there is a persistent thought that Amazon is going to get into the drug distribution business. And when they do, they can take PBMs. You know, the benefit managers, the pharmacy benefit managers out of the equation. That allows there to be some new money in the system that can be saved. So it's possible that Amazon, negotiating directly with Big Pharma, is going to get the same good prices that PBMs do, and they're not going to put it in the pocket of the PBMs, but they're going to pass that on through, and that clearly is going to decrease cost.
So can I just add, because we've got about a minute left here, and I know healthcare is never an easy problem, and you could use hours and hours to discuss it. Having said that, what needs to be the first step towards a smarter healthcare system where people are getting good care and not missing out on care, but the costs aren't escalating all over the place?
I think we have to realign the system, manage care better, identify those patients who are the high consumers of care, navigate them, case manage them, prevent disease in those high utilizers as best we can. We've been able to successfully do that. I think this can be done on a much larger scale. So if I'm Amazon, J.P. Morgan, Berkshire Hathaway, what I'm saying is I've got the algorithms in-house to do the predictive analytics on who are going to get sick and who's been using a lot of health care, and I'm going to identify those people a priori, and I'm going to really focus them on wellness programs. I'm going to have them see the doctor as frequently as they should so that we can avoid the big catastrophes at the end.
Yeah, it's a major rethink, but, you know, it's certainly long overdue, and that's why you've got the frustrations among the folks over at Amazon, Berkshire, and J.P. Morgan coming together. Dr. Kenneth Davis, thank you so much for your time again. President, Chief Executive Officer at Mount Sinai Health System, Dr. Davis joining us on the phone in New York City. You are listening to Bloomberg Markets right here on Bloomberg Radio.
Attention campers, the new Camp Snoopy at Kings Island brings your family summer camp fun all season long. Head to Camp Snoopy with Charlie Brown and the whole Peanuts gang for fun and adventure. Race forwards and backwards on the new family boomerang coaster, Snoopy Soapbox Racers. Explore on your own with more space to roam at Beagle Scout Acres. And don't forget to grab a snack at Pigpen's Mess Hall. It's a new way to play with the Peanuts gang at Camp Snoopy. Now open, only at Kings Island, for the fun of it.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. You need a company with extensive experience in specialized insurance. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and helping provide coverage that suits your needs. The Hartford offers insurance solutions that help mid to large-sized businesses, like yours, effectively manage risk, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. With extensive experience in underwriting, risk engineering services, and claims, The Hartford goes beyond the expected to deliver innovative, customizable solutions and service that your industry, that your business, demands. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Johann Schmiegel, you've got the world's highest IQ.
Yes, 247.
Wow, did you know that thanks to Salesforce with Einstein AI, everyone's smarter? Now everyone's an Einstein, just like you.
But I'm the smartest.
Not anymore. With connected data and trusted AI, everyone can give customers experiences they've only dreamed of. Oh, look, here's a few Einsteins now.
Hey, hi.
Hola, amigo.
Everyone's an Einstein?
It's okay, Johann, let it happen. The number one AI CRM. Now everyone's an Einstein with Salesforce.
People often ask me what Dave Wilson looks like when he's not on the radio. And I tell him he's kind of your average Rastafarian, long dreads, often up in a big hat. Don't worry about a thing. He's here. Dave Wilson, our stocks editor.
I just don't know where to begin, chart of the day. Corey. I wish I had that much hair after all these years, but I digress. The chart looks at what happens when the S&P 500 ends a streak similar to the one we're in now. You know, we've gone 569 days, so, you know, year and a half and change, without the S&P 500 falling 5% from a peak. And given what happened the last 2 days in the market, you know, it's sort of a reminder, if nothing else, that the streak's got to end sometime, which raises the question, what happens when it does? Is it a case where the market just sort of falls out of bed, or do you get something less than that? The short answer, if you look back at history, is less than that. And it's something that Sam Stovall, who's the chief investment strategist over at CFRA, did in a report this week. He looked at 10 other periods after World War II where the S&P 500 went at least 250 days without falling 5% from a high. So what happens when those streaks end? On average, well, you get a decline of less than 10%. And I say that because 6 out of the 10 instances fall into that category, which really means they turned out to be dips in the market as opposed to corrections, which, you know, we tend to talk about 10% drops as fitting that particular category, or bear markets with declines of 20% or more. You only had one of them, and that occurred back in the early 1960s. So, you know, don't worry.
His point is, when you've seen such momentum to the upside without significant corrections, you're not likely to see that significant correction.
That's what it comes down to, at least not initially, because, yeah, you know, we're talking about the losses that end the streaks here. So it's not like the market sort of turns on its head after extended periods of strength. If you want to know more, folks, send me an email. I'll get you the chart, the explanation that goes with it, and everything I do going forward. The email address is dwilson@bloomberg.net. That's dwilson@bloomberg.net.
Thank you, Dave Wilson. This is Bloomberg. Oh, yeah, that'll get you in the mood, everybody. Football, football, football. And, of course, we've got the Super Bowl coming up. Shares of 21st Century Fox, though, tumbling. A little bit of a foul there as investors weighed the $3 billion-plus price tag on the company's accord to carry Thursday night football. Let's talk about it with Jerry Smith. Follows Fox in the world of media. He is our media reporter here at Bloomberg News in our Bloomberg 1130 studio. So investors are saying, yeah, we don't like this.
Yeah, it's a really interesting reaction on Wall Street. I mean, you would think that when you win a bidding auction for NFL games, I mean, this is the most popular thing on television, you would think investors would be very excited about that.
It used to be that investors would be excited, right?
Right. I mean, the context of this is that NFL ratings have declined the last 2 years. Mm-hmm. So I think investors are looking at Fox paying $3 billion or so for these 11 games over the next 5 years and saying, wait a minute, you know, if you look at the trend here, these ratings are declining. Are you going to be able to turn a profit on, you know, selling advertising during these games?
Well, and to that, I mean, what's the price tag here? What are we talking about? Because one of the things leading up to this is one of the only deals that was going to come up at any time soon. So if anyone wanted to get involved in sports, if Amazon Prime wanted to get involved or Facebook wanted to get involved, there was thoughts that maybe they would actually bid up for this thing, and they may indeed have been bidders here.
And
right?
CBS and NBC were bidders.
Right. So, I mean, CBS and NBC did bid, and Fox outbid them. But the digital, there also is digital rights to these games that the NFL said they're going to announce in the coming weeks. And so there is the possibility that somebody like an Amazon or a Twitter or a Facebook could win those rights as well. So, I mean, that is the big question, I think, for TV sports going forward is, you know, when are some of these Silicon Valley giants that are dipping their toes into television, when are they going to really get into this? And so far, this is still going to a traditional TV network, but, you know, there is a digital rights aspect of this as well.
Jerry, we say $3 billion. We don't know for sure, though, right? These are just reports?
This is reports, yes.
I mean, based on your reporting and following all of this, you know, this could be a gamble, correct?
Yeah, I mean, it's still, NFL is still the biggest thing on television. I mean, it still gets huge numbers. I mean, the Super Bowl's this Sunday, and it is most likely going to get over 100 million viewers.
And people tune in to see it live.
Right. That's kind of
games
the,
too.
That's the thing about this is that it's, even though the ratings have declined for the NFL, I mean, you look at the top 50 broadcasts last year, I think 37 of them were NFL games. I mean, it's still, even though the ratings are declining, I mean, ratings are declining everywhere else. If you're an advertiser, you're still going to pay a lot of money for these commercials because you don't have anywhere else to go. There's nowhere else for you to reach a live audience, a big live audience that's actually going to watch your commercial these days.
This might also mean more Troy Aikman and Joe Buck.
Yeah,
Troy Aikman, I said, yeah, no, yeah.
I think Tony Romo is pretty good on CBS.
I agree, and he's not on Fox. That's why I was, yeah.
But Aikman. This is more of the Fox folks on Thursday nights.
I think there's a lot of football out there. That's all I'm going to say. Monday night, Thursday
never enough,
night,
says Paul Brennan, our producer.
Weekends.
I'm with him.
That's one of the theories for why the ratings are down.
And Saturdays. Don't forget about Saturdays, college football. Great stuff. Thank you very much, Jerry Smith from Bloomberg News.
I'm driving in my car. I turn on the radio.
Yeah, how about you let me drive?
Oh, no. Who's gonna drive you home? Honey, please, I'll do the driving.
Drive on.
Excuse me, I want to drive.
Just drive, baby.
It's the question that drives us.
This is the Drive to the Close.
That funky music will drive us till the dawn.
On Bloomberg Radio.
Indeed, time driving to the close. Just less than 10 minutes left of the trading day, but a good time to look at the equity markets. We've got some help with that. Jim Russell, portfolio manager at Ball and Gaynor, joins us right now with a particular focus on income. Stocks that will actually give us income. Yes, we're talking about dividends. Jim, in this low rate environment, in what we had as a low rate environment, dividend paying stocks were of great interest to a big section of the market. How does that change as we start to see the 2, the 5, and the 10 start to offer some better returns?
Yeah, Corey, I think that's a question on everybody's mind. I appreciate you bringing it to our attention. We are, just to be clear, a income growth manager using all equities. It is all common stocks, no converts, no options, no derivatives, no leverage, and certainly no fixed income. So what we do is we focus on the growth of the dividend. We do think that the dividend is really overlooked by a lot of the investing public, as well as the sell side. We are unaware of any sell side analyst that really forecasts the dividend. We do that work internally via the cash flows. But to your point, we think that high yielding dividend stocks, which is not the area that we focus in on, will certainly be vulnerable in a higher rate environment. And we do see rates normalizing for 2018, 19, perhaps even beyond. So areas of the market such as telecom, REITs, utilities, some staples are likely to be a bit vulnerable in that type of environment.
What kind of environment do your investors think we're in right now? And I ask that because after some of the selling that we saw over the last couple of days does not make a trend. I get it. But I'm just curious what you're hearing from those investors.
Yeah, Carol, that's a great question as well. I would tell you that our clients, institutional and private clients, are highly skeptical of the very strong start that we've gotten off to in 2018. They're a bit nervous. They're kind of looking over one shoulder saying, surely this won't continue. Aren't we due for a fall? So I think there's a degree of nervousness, a degree of realism that to extrapolate 2017 or early 18 trends would be irresponsible. So I know, I understand that the sentiment indicators out there, bulls, bears, all kinds of investor sentiment are reaching highs, meaning, of course, that makes for a nervous market. Our actual clients are much less bullish and much more concerned about protecting downside, which is where good dividend growth type of investing really helps. We do offer great downside protection. Our stocks simply don't go down as much as the market when volatility does rear its ugly head.
So do you actually then, therefore, even in spite of rising rates, think that people are going to move more money towards dividend-paying stocks as their concern of the market grows, even though the relative difference between a dividend-paying stock and a higher-yielding treasury or whatever is going to be lessened?
Yeah, Corey, it of course depends on what the client's specific needs are, the risk tolerance, income needs, et cetera. Right. But we do think that dividend growth stocks are a great alternative, frankly, to fixed income. Yes, there's a bit more volatility attendant to equities than fixed income, and we understand that. But we do think that if an investor has a longer-term time horizon, a pre-retiree, a retiree, a foundation, an endowment, that great income flows can be garnered by income growth types of investing, starting with a 2.5%, 3.5% yield, and perhaps picking stocks that are able to grow that income 10% every year, perhaps a little bit more in certain years. We are seeing absolutely from the tax package and strong economic growth, companies willing to goose that dividend in 2018, and we're hopefully beyond that as well. Repatriated funds will also be part of that as well. So we do think that.
So you're talking one-time dividends or dividend increase? Because what we saw last time was a couple of companies writing some really big one-time dividends, and that's a wonderful thing if you're long that stock when you suddenly get a big check.
Right.
And are you trying to predict those now?
Well, no, we are not big fans of the big one-time special dividend. We would much rather see a company grow its dividend at 9%, and because of better economic trends or tax package benefits, perhaps lift that to a sustainable 11% annual growth rate. That is our sweet spot, and we think that's where our clients would like us to be as well. Not only does it provide great downside protection, but these companies are benchmark competitive against the S&P 500. And secondly, the income beats inflation with a type of, call it 8, 9, 10% annual increase in the income with inflation, let's just say, centered around 2%.
Hey, one question I love to ask folks who've been in the market and seen a lot of different cycles, such as yourself, Jim, is, what is it about this particular market cycle that stands out, is distinct, is different from what we've seen in the past? What's the same?
Great question. I have seen this sort of thing a couple of times in my career, which is now, maybe north of 30 years. And every once in a while, the moons and stars align where inflation is low, the consumer's in a good mood, business spending looks like it's getting ready to hook up. Mm-hmm. You have global participation, rates are low, the Fed seems to be somewhat friendly, and now, of course, you had the federal government on your side in terms of tax package and possibly an infrastructure spending. So I think those, Carol, those types of environments are candidly pretty rare,
right,
and certainly don't last. And so I would think that's somewhat unique, no question.
Speaking of moons, it's a blue moon tonight. Do you know that?
That's right.
Oh, last night? No, I think it's tonight, Paul Brennan.
Yeah.
Ugh, I guess I missed it.
Paul All Brennan, right. Our producer, is also our chief astronomer.
Jim Russell, good
he'll
to get
doing,
some time
he'll be
with you.
Doing horoscopes later.
I guess so. Principal and portfolio manager at Ball & Gaynor, $22.4 billion in assets under management. Jim joining us on the phone from Cincinnati.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I feel the earth move under my feet.
You move like they do. I've never seen anyone move that fast. Shake.
Shake. All right, people, let's move like we've got a purpose.
Company's called Movers and Shakers. They cost a little more, but that name cracked me up.
Bloomberg Markets, Movers and Shakers, with Carol Masser and Corey Johnson on Bloomberg Radio.
All right, everybody, time for your Movers and Shakers on this Wednesday afternoon. The S&P 500, 267 names higher in the index, 233 lower, 5 unchanged. I'm going to talk, though, a little bit about Microsoft, because those numbers already crossing the Bloomberg. Microsoft, second quarter loss of 82 cents a share. That seems kind of weird, doesn't it, Corey?
Yes, it does. Well, let's wait here a second, see what we get more on this, because Microsoft, the expectation, of course, is not for a loss from Microsoft.
No, this doesn't seem quite right. They are talking, GAAP includes a net charge of $13.8 billion related to the tax adjustment. Okay.
So the adjusted profits expected from Microsoft, were $6.7 billion, which is which would have been slightly bigger, 1% larger than last quarter.
Second quarter revenue from Microsoft, $28.92 billion. That's a little bit better than what analysts were forecasting. They were looking for 28.39. Again, those numbers just crossing. Quick check on Microsoft in the after hours, just down a hair, down about 0.2%, but lots more to be known. Qualcomm, as Charlie mentioned, also out. And they, first quarter adjusted EPS of 98 cents a share. First quarter adjusted revenue of $6.04 billion. That's better than the forecast of $5.93. Taking a look at the second quarter, looking for an adjusted EPS of 65 to 75 cents a share. And what is Qualcomm doing in the after hours? Just quickly down 1.2%.
So the Microsoft results, fantastic results. So revenue of $28.9 billion. That's up 12% year over year. Operating profits of $8.7 billion. That's up 10% year over year. And as we mentioned, there's a tax write-off here, or tax-related change. So I usually don't like to look at non-GAAP, that is the adjusted number, but I will, in the case of Microsoft, because they tend to do things in a little cleaner way than some worse companies. But Microsoft results include a big charge because of the tax changes and the Jobs Act, Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, TCJA. But their non-GAAP profit of $7.5 billion is fantastic. So if you look at what their profit was a year ago, it was $6.6 billion, which is to say Microsoft, in the 13 weeks of the fourth quarter, made an extra $1 billion in profit. Mm-hmm. That's a fantastic quarter for this company, and it really shows the success that Satya Nadella has had moving their business onto the cloud. Really powerful stuff. I'm going to look into their intelligent cloud business.
Right.
Revenue's up there 15% year over year. There's no currency impact there. And their server product, their Azure business, right? Their Microsoft Azure business, which competes with Amazon, up 98%.
Which is interesting because the stock's been, I don't know whether investors are trying to make sense of it, because the stock's just, call it unchanged. It's been a little bit lower, not dramatically. And right now it's pretty much flat. So I think investors trying to make sense. Hey, let's make sense of Facebook earnings just crossing the Bloomberg. Facebook fourth quarter revenue, $12.97 billion. That tops an estimate of $12.55 billion. Fourth quarter EPS of $1.44 a share. Fourth quarter daily active users, right? We like to look at what's going on a daily or monthly use usage basis at Facebook. $1.40 billion. That's a little light. Or maybe on par, $1.41 billion, Corey, is the estimate that people have looking.
So both daily active and monthly active users were up 14% year over year, which is slower growth than they've had in the past, certainly, but also shows that the what I like to call the consumption rate, which is to say how many people use Facebook every day. Most people on Facebook use Facebook every day.
Not me.
But that's not changing.
No.
You don't use Facebook any day. So, you know.
Sorry.
They're doing fine without you.
I know.
Also,
they are.
Interestingly, mobile advertising revenue was 89% of ad revenue, up from 84% a year ago. So increasingly, we're seeing that that people are moving their most of the revenue, more than most, 89%, people moving away from ever consuming on the desktop, and everybody's on their phones.
Stock is down 2.7% in the after hours shares. Now it's down about 3%, 3.5%. So we are seeing Facebook,
one last thing on Facebook,
tend a little bit lower. Yeah.
Headcount up 47%. They've got 25,105 employees.
So 47%. Staff.
Just adding like staff like crazy they're hiring.
All right. Again, Facebook shares are down 3.4% in the after hours. Right now, Microsoft's down about 1%. We're going to be talking a little bit more about those names in just a moment. Let's get to the volatility index report. It is down 7%, down 1 point at 13.72. This is Bloomberg.
All right, Dave, you're up.
Hi, my name is Dave.
Wilson, where are you? Wilson!
Just what do you think you're doing, Dave?
We're going for the price on Wilson.
Open up the door, it's Dave!
Who?
Dave!
Hey, Mr. Wilson!
Dave Wilson joins us, our stocks editor, with his stock of the day.
Right. You know, Corey, when a company resolves accounting issues, its shares often rise as investors regain some confidence in the financial statements. This wasn't the case for Roadrunner Transportation Systems, a trucking company whose ticker is RRTS. 1 year ago today, the company disclosed it would have to restate results for 2014, 2015, and the first three quarters of 2016 because of accounting errors. The review was later expanded back to 2011, Roadrunner's first full year as a public company. The results were released today. They showed Roadrunner overstated net income by about $66.5 million. The company said in a statement that accounting mistakes substantially impacted all financial statement line items and disclosures. And that's a quote. In the six-year period, Roadrunner also disclosed the cost of restating results and refinancing debt reduced last year's earnings by an estimated $30 million. Company added that revenue was in line with the 2016 figure. You put it all together, Roadrunner shares fell to a record low of $5.46 during today's trading. They closed at $5.57 for a loss of 22%. And that's the steepest drop for the stock since those accounting errors first came to light.
All right, Dave Wilson, thank you so much. Our Bloomberg Stocks columnist, Dave Wilson, with his stock of the day. Just watching some of our live blogs here on Facebook. Selena Wang, our technology reporter, saying that though the company, Facebook, beat on revenue, its daily active user accounts slightly missed estimates. That's one of the most important metrics that Wall Street cares about. And that's partly why the shares are trading down here in the after hours. And we are seeing Facebook down about 3%. This is Bloomberg.
Thanks for listening to Coast to Coast. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Bloomberg.com.
You can also listen to our radio show weekdays at 2 o'clock Eastern, only on Bloomberg Radio. And follow us on Twitter. She's at Carol Masser, and I'm at Corey TV.
A
Attention campers, the new Camp Snoopy at Kings Island brings your family summer camp fun all season long. Head to Camp Snoopy with Charlie Brown and the whole Peanuts gang for fun and adventure. Race forwards and backwards on the new family boomerang coaster, Snoopy Soapbox Racers. Explore on your own with more space to roam at Beagle Scout Acres. And don't forget to grab a snack at Pigpen's Mess Hall. It's a new way to play with the Peanuts gang at Camp Snoopy. Now open, only at Kings Island, for the fun of it.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Johann Schmiegel, you've got the world's highest IQ.
Yes, 247.
Wow, did you know that thanks to Salesforce with Einstein AI, everyone's smarter? Now everyone's an Einstein, just like you.
But I'm the smartest.
Not anymore. With connected data and trusted AI, everyone can give customers experiences they've only dreamed of. Oh, look, here's a few Einsteins now.
Hey, hi.
Hola, amigo.
Everyone's an Einstein?
It's okay, Johann, let it happen. The number one AI CRM. Now everyone's an Einstein with Salesforce.